The Vampire Kitty Cat Chronicles, Chapter 16, Back to the Graveyard. I struggled with the net, but every time I was about to get it open, Grant roared around a corner and sent me tumbling across the floor of the van. Finally, she slammed on the brakes. Tires squealed. I was flung against the back of her seat, and we came to a stop. She got out and opened the side door. Her eyes were wide and glazed, and she had a creepy little smile. No smile in her voice, though, when she said, "You thought you'd avoid the justice you deserve with your cute little kitty-cat court tricks." I managed to get a paw out of the net, but she grabbed the handle and lifted, and I was hanging helpless again. Helpless and hungry.
"I may not be able to kill you, having no wooden stakes handy, but I can make you wish I had."
She took me out of the truck. Moonlight and the glow from two distant street lamps revealed that we were parked by a cemetery. It was my former prowling grounds where Meg had turned me into a vampire. Slinging the net and me over her shoulder, Grant strode into the cemetery. As I swung upside down in the net, I saw an old hearse, long and black with fishtail fins on the rear fenders, its lights off, coast to a stop by the curb. Grant didn't look back. She marched through grave markers until we came to an area separated from the main graveyard by a picket fence. Above a gate hung a sign that read, "Pet Heaven." Inside were 20 or so small plots. She stopped beside one with a fresh mound of dirt in front of a pink tombstone engraved with ribbons and bows and the words, "My precious Puffy." Grant sniffled.
"My poor baby."
She held the net up so I dangled before her, on my back in the net, twisting to and fro. She said,
"I've always hated cats. You're sneaky."
Stealthy. People confuse sneaky with stealthy. We're not sneaky. I inhaled and gave her a hiss. She grinned.
"Oh, the poor kitty cat doesn't agree. Well, let's just make sure you don't sneak around and attack innocent bystander poodles again."
Grant hefted the net and hung me over Puffy's grave. Unlike the dog, the dirt was blissfully silent. I didn't regret a thing. She swung the net back and then slammed me into the tombstone. It didn't exactly hurt, but it didn't feel good either. If she kept it up, I'd end up a bunch of broken bones, shades of Lester. She swung the net back for another whack, but stopped when a large black dog stepped from behind the stone and bared its teeth at her. Its nose angled off to the left. Good old nasty, Lester's vampire pooch. I never thought I'd be glad to see him. In fact, I wasn't. He was pretty useless, even for a dog. The tree behind the dog moved closer, growled, and then said,
"When are you going to catch on, Nosferatu?"
It emerged from the darkness to stand beside the dog. I'd forgotten how Lester's 7 feet of vampire could take over the scenery. Or, in this case, be the scenery. He wore a "Vote for Meg" badge pinned to his shirt. Him I was glad to see.
"Murph?" "Ah, Patch, there you are. Your friends are worried about you."
It was Grant's turn to hiss.
"Friends? Bloodsuckers, you mean?"
Speaking of bloodsucking, the hunger had grown in my belly, and it was difficult to concentrate. I writhed and swiped with my free paw, but Grant was out of reach.
"Come on, Lester, do something."
Lester said, "Call me Lestat. And, except for special occasions, I'm no longer a bloodsucker." He reached out, grabbed the net pole, and yanked it from her. He set it on the ground and lifted the net away from me. Then he took a step forward. He smiled, letting his fangs show.
"This could be one of those special occasions."
The burn of bloodlust grew in me. Grant looked delicious. Grant's bravado, a tsunami of power when she was dealing with a 15-pound cat, evaporated in the night air. She retreated and stood behind Puffy's tombstone.
The whole town will be after you if you kill me.
How would they know?
She paled. My body?
Now, why would I leave something like that lying around?
Besides, who said I wanted to kill you? With his fangs gleaming in the moonlight, I could see how she might draw that conclusion. I, on the other hand, only wanted to rip her throat open and lap up her blood. A low moan escaped my muzzle, and I crouched. A quick charge, a leap for her throat, and Lester bent down to me.
Hungry?
He reached into a pocket, pulled out a roll of death sabers, and set three of the O-shaped blobs of blood on the grass.
Enough?
I swallowed the first one whole. Pain in my belly eased immediately, though not fully, so I gobbled the other two death sabers. The rush of pleasure spread through my body, and I sat, feeling rosy. Ginger Grant held an arm out toward Lester as if to ward him off.
Oh, no. You're not going to make me a vampire. Oh, no.
She backed a step. Lester's face took on his patented evil glee expression. I thought the vivid claw marks I left on the sides of his neck added a nice touch. He said,
Why not? Live forever. No more dieting.
Her eyebrows rose. No more dieting? Then she shook her head. I'd rather not, thanks anyway.
Okay. Have it your way. However, I am in the mood for a little dessert.
She backed away, then tripped over a low grave marker with the name Mittens on it. Had to be a cat. She fell flat on her back. Lester shouted,
Nosferatu!
The dog leaped forward, planted his paws on Grant's chest, and pinned her to the ground. He leaned close to her neck and sniffed. Nasty's very real fangs showed. Still doing the evil thing, Lester knelt beside her. She pushed at Nasty, but Lester added a giant hand on her head and kept her pinned. She cried,
No, please. They'll know it was you. It'll be terrible publicity. Your candidate will never be elected. You'll be persecuted.
Ah, well, easy come, easy go.
Now, I was enjoying this. Ms. Grant had not been this kitty cat's best friend. I glanced around to make sure no one was around. Nope, just the hearse and the news van, the big letters KTBC on the side, parked on the street. It would be good to have the noisy reporter gone. Might help Meg's campaign if Grant wasn't around overacting about vampires. Lester leaned forward, opening his mouth wide. Grant screamed. Then it hit me. I couldn't let this happen. I shook off my lethargy, trotted to the prone reporter, and stood so my body covered her neck. I looked up at Lester. Nasty opened his mouth wide, baring his fangs as if he were growling. Lester scowled and sat back on his heels. Then he reached for me. I sprang away, and Lester's grab missed. He sat back and stared at me with that frustrated look you see on people who try to catch a cat and have to face up to how much quicker we are. I'd had it with being tossed from one threat to the next, and I had a couple of choices, one of which was to run for it and live, exist on my own, dining on rats and other vermin. Blech. No, I liked Meg more and more, not to mention access to a good, clean blood supply. But we V's were increasingly hounded, thanks to the news and the fact that Meg had brought us all out of the casket. Well, maybe getting Meg elected would be a big step toward getting people off our backs. And Grant could help with that. Doing one of those slow-motion moves that cats do to avoid being attacked, I went back to Grant, who had stopped struggling but was breathing hard. Her eyes bulged as she watched me approach. Nasty took a step toward me, but Lester stopped him.
Patch wants something. First bite, maybe? Well, he's earned that.
I got to Grant and then stood with both paws on her press badge. She squealed. Lester said,
Hush.
Then I walked to Lester, stood and put my paws on his chest, then butted his Vote for Meg badge with my head. Moving quickly, I turned and went back to Grant and touched her press badge with my nose. For a mostly dead guy, Lester did all right in the cogitation department. He nodded to me and then leaned over Grant, exposing his fangs, his hand still holding her head to the ground. She squealed again. He said, I see where your dog got his bad habits. Shut up. Understand? She nodded. Patch seems to think that you could be more useful to us alive rather than dead. I said, Murph. She said, Anything. I'll do anything. All right. How about stopping your attack on Patch? And we vampires could use some positive press. I'm thinking a feature story on how our rights are being denied.
What rights? Aren't you dead?
Not altogether. We still pay taxes, and we have a right to access to our government services, but they're closed during the night. If you can put in ramps for wheelchairs, you can turn on the lights and staff up for the night shift. Megan made a convert. Grant glanced at me, then at Nasty, who still stood on her chest, looking pretty fierce with his mouth hanging open and all those teeth sticking out, and then up to Lester. She swallowed hard.
All right. I'll lay off the cat. Maybe it was self-defense after all. And I'll do a story on the troubles vampires are having. Good enough?
I went back to Lester and reared up to put my paw on the Meg badge. Lester said, And we want good coverage on Meg Murrow's campaign for the city council.
Grant snorted. You don't have to ask for that. If I'm alive, there's no way you can keep me from following the campaign of the first vampire to run for public office.
Lester took his hand off her forehead, and she sighed a long, shaky breath. He said, All right, Ms. Grant. We're agreed. He leaned close. But remember, if you turn on us, I don't think you'll be getting much sleep while you wait for a vampire to creep into your bedroom for... He smiled, and his fangs gleamed. A midnight snack. He stood and said, Nosferatu, let the lady up. The dog stepped off of Grant's chest, and she sat up. She gazed at me, and I gave it right back. She said, Maybe I have let my emotions get the best of me. I mean, you vampires are not only a great story, you're scary, too. She looked up at Lester. Mr. Lestat, I'll do my best to be fair, but I can't promise more than that. She shook her head. If that won't do, then you'll have to go ahead and kill me. She closed her eyes and tilted her head back to expose her neck. Kinda gutsy. I saw a glimmer in Lester's eyes, and he licked his fangs. But then he stuck a huge hand down, grabbed the back of her collar, and lifted her to her feet. I'll be watching. Back at the lawyer's condo, Lester carried me into the study. Tom and Tim were at their twin-facing desks. Meg and Seiko sat in chairs, and Igor leaned against the fireplace mantel. They all wore Vote for Meg badges. Meg ran to Lester, took me in her arms, and administered a rib-cracking hug. Ordinarily, I hated being squeezed like that, but from her it was kinda good. Seiko gave Lester a similar hug, but not at the rib level, seeing as how her head barely came above his navel. She said, My hero. Meg sat and set me in her lap, facing her. She stroked my back and said, You did it, Patch. You won the case. Tom said, I don't know how you picked up the fact that Ernie Burt was holding back, but it was brilliant. I may take you with me to my next trial. His brother added, We're going to need all the help we can get. We've served the city with a civil suit for equal access to public facilities. They'll resist, of course. So, maybe I was into a new career as a legal consultant? I didn't know about that. Besides not wanting to lower myself, I much preferred being petted. Meg's steady stroking sparked a purr. It became hard to focus on the talk. Igor chimed in, his voice musical in a nice way. He said to the lawyers, You're going to need money, too. Your practice isn't exactly thriving these nights. The doorbell rang, and when Igor opened the door, a big guy who reminded me of Bruce shouldered his way past, one hand stuck inside his suit coat. I'd seen gangster movies with guys just like that doing the same thing. Generally, they sooner or later pulled out a gat and blew somebody away. Big guy took a quick look into the study and adjoining rooms, then went back to the door. To someone outside, he said, Clear, boss. Big Guy stepped aside, and a bald-headed man with a short-legged, stocky body and jutting jaw and jowls of a bulldog entered. Tom said, "My God, it's," Tim finished, "Daddy Greenbanks, the conservative that makes the right wing look like communists." Daddy stopped in the middle of the study and surveyed us.
"That would be me."
He pulled a cigar out and lit it. Tom said, "This is a non-smoking household, sir." I thought it was interesting how he called the man, sir. Daddy shrugged.
"You guys aren't breathing, so there's no problem with secondhand smoke."
Igor minced into the room, followed by Big Guy, who then stood in the doorway. Igor said,
"It is with me."
"But you're a fag."
Meg said, "I know you're most of the money and power in Bloomsburg, Mr. Greenbanks, but being rude isn't going to get you anywhere here. And we have to breathe in to speak, so your smoke is hurting all of us."
Daddy shook his head, then handed the cigar back. Big Guy rushed forward to take it and then ground it out on the palm of his hand. Didn't even flinch.
Daddy said, "Oh, for the good old days. People got too many rights these days."
Meg said, "And we're suing for even more. Do you have a problem with that?"
Daddy glared at her. "You're the one running for the city council."
"Yes." He swung his gaze to the lawyers.
"And you're suing the city so you vampires, who the Reverend Bobson so accurately called abominations, can run around free and clear?"
He got nods from the twins. Meg, her tone pugnacious, said,
"So? I think it's time I took a hand."
He snapped his fingers and Big Guy stepped forward, reaching inside his coat. I braced for a leap.
The song is Dire Wolf, from Reckoning, by the Grateful Dead.
Please don't hurt me.
For more fun, visit VampireKittyCat.com.